I'm not a TikTok star or anything like that.
You
Not
don't
at
do the
all. But
dance.
I just no. I don't dance. I don't do very funny stuff. But if you have a nice video and it has this kind of snowball effect and can spread very very far.
Welcome to the 10th episode of the Mobile Storytelling Podcast with me, Wietse Vellinga, in Friesland, in the Netherlands.
And me, Björn Staschen, in Hamburg, Germany. It's a jubilee episode. It's the 10th, Wietse. Did you notice?
Absolutely.
This
yes.
podcast is Party. About how to tell a story with your smartphone.
And today we have another great guest who has told impressive stories, especially for an audience that is using smartphones. Stories produced on his smartphone. Marcel Endorit.
Hey, Björn and Wietse, thank you very much for having me from Switzerland.
A reporter for the Swiss broadcaster SRF. He has been telling stories with his smartphone for years now. He has reported for national news programs on linear TV, as well as social media channels. And in the last years, he got permission to produce exclusively for social media.
But let's start at the beginning. How did you get to know mobile journalism? How did you get in touch with it?
That was indeed, I think, in the autumn of 2014, when the new iPhone 6 came out. And that was, when I remember it correctly, the first iPhone which had a full HD camera and a full HD screen. And I was working for the news show with Swiss TV for the daily evening news, and I thought if I have an iPhone, a smartphone with a full HD camera and a full HD screen, I should it should be possible to do things for TV with the iPhone. And so I started looking on the internet, and I saw that there were some guys from RTE, from the Irish public TV station, who were already doing TV stuff with their iPhones 5 or 5S. And I was very impressed by this and thought I should try to do my first TV report with an iPhone 6. And that's what I did, but without telling anyone at the station, because smartphones were not thought to be a TV news gathering device then in 2014.
What was the response?
What
was the response? How did they?
It was quite funny. I was already working as a VJ back then. Had some Sony VJ camera from the station, which I use from time to time. And they, it was a little story with our Russian correspondent who was in Switzerland at the time. And I shot this 2 minute story with my iPhone, and they realized it was probably shot as a VJ. And they discussed it the next day, and I was not there at the meeting, but they told me later that they said, yeah, they had a lot of nice camera angles or creative ideas, but no one thought it was shot on a phone. And I told them a day later that I actually shot it on a phone, and that's why. And then that they decided to discuss it another time the day after this day, and that was the first iPhone report we had with Swiss TV.
And were they angry or pleased or interested?
Actually, they were quite surprised, because it just hadn't occurred to them that it would be possible to do a TV report with a device everyone used for making phone calls and talking to each other in the office. But they were surprised, and because it was not perfect at all. The heads looked a little bit reddish, and the colors were a little bit strange, but that happens also with VJ work sometimes. And so they were quite surprised, and my boss, I can remember this very well, he told me not everyone should do this, please, but as long as I want to go on trying doing stuff like that, it was okay for him.
Did you bring a technical background? Were you a bit of a geek already? Because I hear that some call you the iPhone doctor at your company.
that's you did some good research, Björn.
Thank you.
But actually, I was quite fascinated by smartphones from an early day, or by the iPhone. I was in the US in the year 2007 when the first iPhone came out, and a friend of mine and me, we decided to buy one of those things. I think it was $350 or something like that. It was a good bargain.
Yeah, cheap.
Cheap, yeah. Back in the days. And from the beginning, I was very fascinated with this touch screen, with the stuff you could do with your fingers on the screen, with the camera, with the big screen. And some years later, I started to repair iPhones, as Björn said, in our company, just in my spare time.
Did you charge colleagues for it?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because the screens were not free, of course. I had to buy them with AliExpress in China. And I mean, it was, I think one screen was maybe 15 Swiss francs or 20 Swiss francs, and I charged them maybe 40 Swiss francs too.
I sure hope Apple isn't listening to this podcast. Yeah. They're going to hate you.
Sorry about that, Apple. But I really was fascinated that you could take everything out of this little device to get to the screen, which was on the backside with the iPhone 4 and 4S. That was the main models I repaired. You took everything out of the device, changed the screen, put everything in again, attached all the little screws, and it worked again. And so that was quite fascinating to me. But it got complicated with the new models. It got very complicated, and I stopped doing it. So I'm not the iPhone doctor anymore.
And would you say you needed that background in order to be a good iPhone reporter in the beginning, or would you say everyone could have done it in the early days?
Yeah, I think everyone could have done it. I think because of my fascination with the device, I thought it would be nice to do journalistic stuff with it, because I always suffered a little bit with the many things you had to have to do reports. Even when I worked for a radio station some years earlier, I remember being in London, I think, with the terror attacks of 2005, and had an ISDN suitcase with me and Minidisc device to edit my reports on the Minidisc device. It was not very easy to do that. Very complicated. ISDN didn't work in most hotels in London to do live broadcast there, and everything was so complicated technically. And when I sensed the chance to do many things, editing, filming, just with a smartphone, this looked like a great prospect to me.
And is that still the main attraction of working with a phone, or is it also from the storytelling perspective?
I think it has several advantages. One main advantage for me is still that I don't have a lot of heavy gear taken with me. Especially, I'm not very much working abroad at the time, or haven't been working abroad for the last year or 1.5 years. But earlier, for the new show, I was abroad sometimes. And if you have your little suitcase with some clothes there, an umbrella maybe, or pajamas, your toothbrush, and a suit maybe, or at least some decent clothes to go live for the new show, and you have a tripod and a VJ cam and your laptop, it tends to get very heavy and not very easy to handle anymore. So that was one of the main advantages for me. For example, in 2015, I was covering the refugee crisis on the Balkans, And there I was traveling quite lightly with light baggage, with a small suitcase, with a plastic bag with mineral water and a sandwich in there, and my little mojo bag, and that was it. And that was very, that was great for me to work like that.
Did you also see disadvantages when you did it in the first days? Were there things where you thought, well, I wish I had brought the big suitcase?
Yeah, maybe the red heads of people, the red faces. I had some issues with the iPhone 6 with the face color which just wasn't looking so great. But yeah, maybe in some low light situations, with the refugees in Hungary, in Serbia, in the night, on a field with no light, and you had police there, and I just had my little mojo gear with a very little LED light on it. So that was sometimes the quality of the pictures in the night was not very good, but as long as the story was okay, it didn't bother me too much. I never got back to the big cameras. Even now, when many colleagues start to film with photo cameras, or take small VJ cameras, which are getting better all the time as well, I still stick to the phone, because for me it's just the most convenient way to work.
Yeah, circling back to story. How does it improve your storytelling? How does it help you?
With in situations like the refugee crisis, obviously it was a very big advantage to work with a small gear, with a gear which looked very normal to the refugees as well. I was just there with my phone. They had their phones too. We could sit on the ground, have a chat together. I could ask them whether I could record a statement. I was sitting there, held my phone up. That was very, very easy and very eye-to-eye on the same eye level with people, which is something I liked very much. And also in other situations, filming in Switzerland, you just don't get, normally as a TV crew, you always get attention. People notice you. You have a camera guy, a journalist, you have your label sign on the microphone. So everyone knows, oh, Swisty is filming here and doing a report about winter sports in this little area here in the mountains. And if I'm traveling with my mojo gear and nobody notices me, and it's kind of low key being there, talking to people, making some pictures, doing my report, it's much more relaxed to work like that for me.
You have then, being a well-known journalist working for national news, so probably people notice you at the Baker's. Or in the supermarket. You then ventured into producing exclusively for social with your phone. Why did you do that, and how did you convince your company to do that?
Actually, it was a little problem for me, or still is, because my grandmother doesn't see me anymore, yep. Or doesn't read my name anymore on the TV.
She thinks colleagues. You have lost your job, right?
Yeah, absolutely. She's always asking me, "You're not much on television. You have not been on television much lately. What's the matter, Marcel?
Do you need money?"
And yeah. What about your job? Are you still with Swiss TV, or what are you doing? And I try to explain her I'm doing stuff for the internet, and she says, "Oh, okay." But she can't imagine what that could be. So that really is a little bit a problem for me. But on the other hand, I was just very inspired with the Mojo community, which I had a chance to meet you two and other great journalists from around the world, with the Mojo conferences in Ireland. And I was getting, with the years, I didn't lose interest, but I was getting more and more inspired to do little stories, meaningful stories with interesting people, with nice people, give a voice to people you normally don't see on TV or in videos, and to do this all with very simple gear. And that was for me that was the main reason to work or to enjoy work as a journalist. And therefore we had at the same time we had at Swiss TV we had quite a reorganization. We had a new newsroom put up, and our team, our news team from the Tagesschau from Swiss TV was taken apart and ceased to exist. And it was just the right moment where everyone was looking for a new kind of role or place to be as a journalist. And then when I should decide whether I would work for the foreign team or for the Switzerland team or go to another team, I just proposed to my bosses to do a Mojo project. And focus mainly on social media stories, all shot and edited with mobile devices, and they just said, "Why don't you try it?" Yeah.
So it's more personal stories, but couldn't these stories also work on TV?
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually I work. I think for 1 year I did. Solely social media stories filmed vertically from the beginning and edited vertically in 9:16 and they were just put on our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter channels and more I thought why not combine the two channels, social media and broadcast TV, as other journalists have been doing all along as well. But my main interest is what was to do stories which were optimized for viewing on the mobile phone. That's why I checked out this vertical format for 1 year. But more and more my bosses felt that for one thing, they realized I needed quite a lot of time to do these stories, because it took more time to find people who would work and work well in these stories. You just don't go to a party president or a some time of public figure and talk with them. You try to find a person who is normal people who are affected by a story, and this took most of the time. It took quite a lot of time to find the right people.
It was too expensive.
My videos were initially, I thought I would do just 1 minute stories, quite short stories for social media, because everyone thought social media is about short videos when it comes to news. But I quickly realized that the longer videos got much more attention and work better. And so I did stories. When I worked for broadcast, my stories were not more than 2 minutes long. Most of the time it was just 1.5 minutes or 1:40 or something like that. And my social media stories from the beginning were 5 minutes or 6 minutes, sometimes even 10 minutes. And so it took more time. And people at the newsroom asked me to try to do stories who work on television too, not only in social media. And so I tried to check out what was the best way to shoot stories in 4K that would be able to work in 9:16 and in 16:9 at the same time.
What are your hacks, your tips, your ideas in order to make a story work for linear and for social?
I think basically I try to plan a story with a digital audience in mind. It has to be about normal people. It has to be close to people. It has to have a good good opening sequence. The first seconds are very important, and then the storyline has to try to catch people, to keep them watching the report. Technically, I whenever it's possible, I shoot in 4K and 16:9. And I always try to imagine when I'm filming whether a 9:16 segment of the picture would be possible or not, especially when I do interviews. If you shoot an interview in 16:9 in the broadcast format and are too close or quite close to your protagonist, to the face, then you will have problems to cut a 9:16 part of it out of it. So yeah, I film in 16:9. I went back to filming in 16:9, but in 4K, and edit the social media version later.
And what's the response to your stories? Are they watched a lot? Did you get a lot of comments?
Actually, it depends. There is quite a range of response and views. I mean, on TV, I've done TV journalism for 10 years now. No, it's more. It's 15 years now, I think. And on TV, the stories, most of them work, I think. Sometimes the producers think that there should be a national voice in the report, or that there should be some bigger points there, and it should not focus too much on one or two people. That's more on the level of content, but I think on TV the stories usually work. On social media, some stories work very well.
Which ones?
I think my best, the ones who are very, very close to people, and have the first thing is that the main protagonist is interesting and is nice, and people should feel like they want to spend some time with this person. And secondly, if the surrounding is good or interesting. For example, I did a story. My best story, social media wise, was on a 19-year-old girl who drove one of these huge snow groomer, I think you call them, to prepare the slopes in the mountains for skiing. So this 19-year-old girl with this big device, and I just followed her in an early evening and during the night, how she worked, what her thoughts were being alone in this machine on the mountain in the snow. And at the end of her shift, she had to go down to the valley with her skis in the middle of the night, with a little light on her head, and that was just something people don't see every day, or they don't realize it, that young girls do jobs like that in a very special surrounding.
Kollegin, es war nicht so grosse Reaktion, mehr vielleicht Männer oder Brüder von den Kolleginnen, die das erste Mal gelacht haben oder gesagt haben, ja, lass mal schauen, was das gibt, oder halt nicht mit dem gerechnet haben.
Eine junge Frau, die Pistenbulli fährt, ist schon noch außergewöhnlich, oder?
Oh, ich bin nicht unbedingt, nein, wieso nicht?
Ganz normal.
Für mich ist das normal, ja.
So that was I think this story got 3.5 million views on Facebook alone, and
wow.
on Instagram it was also quite good, yeah.
So if there's like a journalist who is currently in lockdown because of COVID and he wants to learn a new skill, and he hears you say, well, I made a video with my smartphone, it got 3.5 million views. What is the most important tip you can give that journalist to get started?
I think it's all about the story. If you have a good story and interesting people that's half of the success you will have with it. And it's certainly, it helps if you know how to shoot a story, how to tell a story in video, in moving images. One thing is that you try to get different shots, that you do close-ups and big screens, and big shots, and but today you have a lot of opportunities, I think, to tell a story with video. But it's the main thing is if you have an interesting person in a good surrounding, in a good setting, I think you can succeed. And on some social media platforms like TikTok, which I like very, very much, by the way.
Really?
The algorithms, because the algorithm, it's so fascinating, but with TikTok, the algorithm is very democratic. it's quite interesting, but on Facebook or on Instagram, on Twitter, I'm always in my bubble. I have my some followers, I follow other people, and the video on Twitter or on Instagram, if it's very popular with me, it gets several hundred or maybe some thousand views on my private account. But with TikTok, my best video, I think, reached 960,000 views. So you can, and the second best videos got, I think, 600,000 views. And I'm not a TikTok star or anything like that. I don't dance. I don't do very funny stuff. But if you have a nice video, and people, the algorithms, I think they're just send the video in very different feeds of people. And if people like it there, if some people like it, it gets to more in the feeds of more people. And it has this kind of snowball effect and can spread very, very far.
So basically your tip is everybody should go on TikTok if you're a journalist.
Yeah, if you really want to reach, your question was how can I reach many people or a million people? And that definitely you can achieve. On TikTok, I think it's the easiest way to achieve anything like that on TikTok. If you want to reach a big audience, I think, but you're limited to 1 minute. That's the disadvantage of the story.
It's quite a project for you and for your company. Do you feel that you are respected at your company with what you do, like you were before as a national television reporter, or how do they react to what you do?
Yeah, it depends. There are people who at the beginning mainly thought I was a little bit crazy doing something like that. I'm sure all of you experienced similar reactions in the last 5-6 years. But more and more, I think that what I find quite interesting is that at our station there are not many journalists trying out Mojo, still not, and I don't really know why this is the case, because I think you can do really good stuff and professional stuff and meaningful stuff with your phone, but it just didn't get like a big thing or something very many people are interested in. But more and more people start to realize that I'm somehow fit for the future, because I can do stuff for social media. I could also do stuff for TikTok if he had a TikTok channel with Swiss TV. And I still can do broadcast reports. And right now, at the moment in our company, they're investing quite heavily on the digital channels and reducing capacities in broadcast, like in most places probably. So I sense that people around me are starting to think maybe he was on the right track from the beginning, and maybe we should have done this earlier also.
And do you feel happy where you are now? Do you think this is the place for me?
Yeah, to be honest, this year I went back to broadcast a little more in the broadcast world. Because in our team where I work, we have a mixture of doing stuff for social media and for our news app, and we're also still doing some little news show for broadcast. And we have many young people there, and they needed a producer who was a little bit more experienced, and they talked me into starting to produce broadcast shows, and from this summer on, I'm also producing broadcast news shows again. So I'm not solely working as a Mojo now, but I'm still with Mojo. I would go back to be a full time Mojo. That's to be honest, that's my goal also for the next 2-3 years. Because it makes me happy. Yeah? I like to work like that.
Well, thank you very much for your time and your insights in your journey as a Mojo journalist. That was the 10th episode of our mobile storytelling podcast with me, Wietse Fellinga in Friesland.
And me, Björn Staschen in Hamburg, Germany. I think we found the perfect fit for the Jubilee episode with Marcel. So thank you very much, Marcel. If you like what you hear, please share our podcast. You can find us on all major platforms.
Thank you for listening, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.